Well, hey, y'all. Welcome to Sips and Sensibility, where every week we talk about a different Jane Austen adaptation. This season, we're covering Emma, and today we'll be talking about the 2020 Emma starring Anya Taylor-Joy. You can find this adaptation of Emma with an HBO subscription, or you can buy it on Amazon. Now that we have our introductions out of the way, Lori, what you sippin'?
Well, to our audience, it might take them by surprise because they don't yet know this about me. But to my two best friends here with me, it will be no surprise. I'm drinking an amaretto sour tonight, and it's delightful. I might have poured it a little heavy.
A classic Lori drink.
It's been a long week.
It has. It has.
Lori, you should tell the listeners what's been going on for you.
Well, in the past 3 weeks, I have been under quarantine because someone in my family has caught corona. And last week, I caught corona. So I've been under quarantine. And then on Monday or Sunday, I forget which one, I went to the urgent care and they told me I had bronchitis. So I am a sick, sick girl who has not left her house in 3 weeks. Save me.
But we appreciate your dedication to the podcast, Lori.
We really, really do. And I know I speak for both Beth and I when we say we're looking forward to when we get a Snapchat from you. And it is not telling us about another medical emergency. So prayers.
They come so often and it's so sad.
Well, this evening I am drinking a butterbeer. I actually can't tell you the brands, but it is just cream soda, butterscotch schnapps, vanilla vodka, whipped cream, and butterscotch syrup. And it is mighty delightful.
Ooh, good. I feel like that's also perfect because it's just post-Halloween, but Harry Potter is also such a Christmassy thing for some reason. So that's like the perfect holiday beverage.
It's like a really good November, December kind of a vibe.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And I knew that I had promised that I would be having red wine this week, but my friend Kelly actually came over to watch this version of Emma with me, and she brought some Merlot. So we got to drink that together and watch this film, and it was just a joy. And today is actually my husband's birthday. He has found a recent obsession with butterscotch, and so the butterbeer is just in celebration of him. It's been quite delightful to sip on.
Oh, well, I think I represent all of the Sips family when I say happy birthday, Ben.
Happy birthday, Ben.
I am actually drinking a Blue Moon iced coffee blonde, so something a little bit different for me.
There is a coffee theme here going on, Jules.
I know.
Well, ladies, I'm kind of afraid to ask after last week, but what did you think about this adaptation?
I loved it.
Okay, so I actually, this is really funny. The first time I watched it, I was texting Beth about it because she had highly recommended it. And I really, really vehemently disliked it. But I think after watching all these Emma adaptations, I really, really enjoyed this film.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I have to say that I just absolutely love this version of Emma. I was just smiling ear to ear the whole time. And like all of my notes are just, I love this. I love this part. Oh, this part is great. I love this. It's by far my favorite adaptation.
I think I still have to say Gwyneth Paltrow holds a very dear place in my heart. And there are some things that I didn't absolutely love, but there is so much that this movie has to offer.
Honestly, I loved it. I mean, it's visually appealing. It's really great. And we'll go into that in a minute. But just all of the like literary elements that stood out and just like symbolism and stuff. Sorry, I'm an English major. It's in my blood. But it was just so funny because I'm like, I know exactly why this director is doing this and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very different. And I totally understand why that would not be appealing to some people and some people really wouldn't like it. But it just worked really well for me. And I think that a lot of other people actually had the same opinion. I mean, if we're looking at Rotten Tomatoes, it has an 87% critic rating. That's based on 235 reviews.
It's really good.
And the audience is 72%. So not as well loved by the audience, but still really good ratings.
I think it's one of those things. I think I've mentioned this before. I'm a part of a Jane Austen fan group, and there are very polarizing views about this film. And it's because some people love it for the artistic adaptation that it is, but true book purists don't love this film. So I think that's kind of why you have that 70%. It's because it's the average of the two polar opinions.
I wonder why the book purists don't like it as much. Because honestly, like watching it, I didn't see a whole lot that was like red flag.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure either. There are a couple of things book-wise. We'll get into this more when we talk about book-to-movie accuracy that I noted. But I think some of it has to do with the fact that tonally, it's a different period piece. I think I noticed this from the very beginning, but one thing that I thought was so cool was as they're getting ready for Miss Weston's wedding, everything moves so seamlessly with the servants helping Miss Woodhouse and Mr. Woodhouse and Emma get ready. It's almost choreographed, and I'm sure it was, but they're just moving so seamlessly, and it's so it's paced so very quickly that it reads very differently from other period pieces that kind of move more slowly. Like if you're looking for a 2005 Pride and Prejudice, beautiful but modern adaptation, that's not what you're going to get here, if that makes sense.
But I would argue that, I mean, yes, I completely agree with you, Julia. I would argue that it is kind of artsy in its own way.
I would say this is the 2005 Pride and Prejudice version of Emma for me. I have those same feelings towards it, and it evoked emotions in me that really only that other movie can when it comes to Jane Austen. Those two are the most comparable for me.
I totally agree with you. I do think, though, that where the disconnect comes is Emma is really more of a comedy than Pride and Prejudice is. There's so many more comedic elements, and this movie really draws those out a lot more than Pride and Prejudice does, where Pride and Prejudice is this romantic drama. This definitely is more comedic, and I think people wanted it to be more dramatic, those that didn't like it.
Yeah, I think when you think of a traditional Jane Austen period piece, you do think of a dramatic film. But this is definitely, like, and I have this written down, it's way more of a rom-com. And I kind of loved it for that because it felt good to laugh, because there's parts of Emma that are just absurd that happen, and you need to laugh at it, and you do in this film.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious. One thing that I will say about period pieces that I think is really cool, some of you may know that this movie is titled Emma, period, and that was actually very intentional, and the director said that the period is to signify that this is a period piece set in its original area. So you see Emma, period, because it's a period piece, and I thought that was just a really funny tidbit.
That's great. I had been wondering that, so that's good to know. I also really liked the music in this movie, which I'm going to touch on more in a second. But one thing I thought was really cool was the actual singing. And we see that in most of Emma, we see the character singing. But, you know, Johnny Flynn, who plays Knightley, is a really famous singer. And he and his other castmates actually do all of their own singing in this movie.
Yeah, as well as the instrumental playing. Like, Jane Fairfax's piano playing in this movie is so incredible. And that was the actress playing it herself. I also read that she had to retrain to play on the pianoforte because it has shorter keys than an actual piano. So they were very dedicated.
Okay, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's some dedication.
Well, as far as actual music and cinematography in the movie goes, what did you guys think?
As for music, I think it's along the same line. I loved it. I thought it went very well with the piece. There were moments where it was like the music was dramatic, the scene was dramatic, you know, the music played along with the cinematography. The only thing I will say is there was a couple parts in the film where there's those choral bits.
The hymns.
Yeah, and a couple of them, I was like, okay, yeah, I can get behind it. But then there was also a couple where it just felt out of place. And I was kind of like, what is happening?
I actually have a theory about that. So I loved the music in this film. The soundtrack was done so beautifully. Honestly, I was sitting there thinking it's very comparable to the Gwyneth Paltrow Emma soundtrack that I thought was so beautiful. It just adds to the emotions so well. I also read that the director wanted the composer for this film to give that kind of Peter and the Wolf vibe, where each character has their own musical instrument kind of melody that goes along with them. So they wanted that to kind of be similar in this film. So each character kind of has instruments that go along with them. So I thought that was really interesting. But as far as the choral hymn bits, I also thought that was weird. It threw me off a little bit. But my theory is that that was very kind of country hymnal singing, if that makes sense. Like, it was very Sacred Harp sounding at times, like where they go like, hur, hur, hur. And so I was wondering if they added that in to remind you that this setting is very country. They're out of the way, if that makes sense.
See, this was actually my favorite musical piece of the movie. I loved it. It reminded me of the Scottish Highlands, and that's just where I belong. So this music felt right at home to me. And also, I'm just a huge cinematography nerd, and this was so good for that.
This was great cinematography.
Yes, and I really love Wes Anderson, and this gave me major Wes Anderson vibes.
The colors.
Yes, the colors. Oh, they were incredible, of the costuming, but also the sets. And then the shots, you know, they're just all of these really cool distant shots in this film, and also just a lot of symmetry, and all of that was just so appealing to me and really added to the reasons. Honestly, that's a huge reason why I love this movie. It's visually very stunning.
I totally agree. Not only was it great to literally be able to see the full thing that's on your screen, because there's nothing worse than watching like something pitch dark. I'm looking at you, Game of Thrones, and you can't tell anything that's happening on screen. So it was great to be able to look at the screen, see what's happening on the screen, and like enjoy it. But I also think that the lightness and the colors and all that cinematography kind of really pulled towards a different type of period piece, where like normal period pieces that we're used to seeing are kind of, you know, dulled down a little bit visually, like the colors.
They're like dark and brooding, kind of.
Yeah, and not all period pieces are like that. You know, like actual historical, like if you look at clothing, it's not like that. They liked colors. So it was kind of refreshing to see it in this movie.
I also feel like it's such a great representation of Emma's youthfulness and kind of bright personality too. But yeah, I thought this music, all of it, the vibe, so aesthetically pleasing. So now that we've talked about the music and cinematography, let's move on and talk about the characters.
Heck yes.
Yes. So let's start with Emma. What did you guys think of this adaptation's version of Emma, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy, a big name? She just starred in The Queen's Gambit. She's been in Split. She's been in quite a few movies. Big
name. That's a lot of like big name, high profile movies and stuff, especially The Queen's Gambit right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been in a lot of really big stuff recently. And Ben and I were in the middle of watching The Queen's Gambit. Like, we literally stopped the episode when my friend got to the house and started watching the 2020 Emma. And it's just such a weird experience. And it really shows off like what a talented actress Anya Taylor-Joy is, because she plays such different characters. I mean, she looks like a completely different person in that TV show versus this film. And it's insane, but I was just blown away by her performance in this. This was the first thing that I saw her in, and I was really highly anticipating this movie coming out. I read tons of interviews with her and Johnny before it came out, and I just really like her, and I'm very impressed with her talent. I think her range is incredible.
I really like this version of Emma, like her portrayal of her. It felt really to character, I guess, and it felt much younger than some of the other ones we've seen. It definitely felt more like she was in her later teens, early 20s. And I definitely liked that pairing with this version of Knightley, which we'll get to in a second. But just the age dynamic felt much better. And her acting of Emma was really, really nice.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that she achieved that perfect balance that we've been talking about between Emma is young, but she's also the head of this major house. And so she needs to be mature along with youthful. And I felt like she did such a great job. She was so vain at the beginning. And I think that kind of rubbed me the wrong way in the first viewing, but I really loved watching her progression. I felt like Emma had such a great character arc. She had such an improvement during this film. I also felt like you already mentioned this, Lori, but her chemistry with Johnny Flynn was just incredible. Mm-hmm. And her relationship with Harriet, too, I thought was really sweet. You know, when we've talked before about the critiques of Robert Martin, and I felt like she was just disdainful enough without it being rude. And I thought that was a really great achievement.
Yeah, I thought she was just the most perfect Emma. I loved everything she did. There's this one scene where she just, I can't even remember what scene it is off the top of my head, but she just, I wrote down like, Emma has amazing eye work. She's just doing like all sorts of like looks with her eyes. And I don't know, I loved it. And I thought, you know, Emma has a really wide range of emotions in this. And sometimes it can be like in a 30-second period, she has five different emotions.
Yeah.
And Anya did such a good job of showing those without it seeming like too outrageous. Obviously, this is a very comical take on Emma, but she still made it seem pretty realistic.
Also, two things that I noticed that I wanted to point out really quickly. One, we're going to talk about this when we talk about the proposal scene, but the nosebleed. What?
Yes.
Fun fact, I read that Anya Taylor-Joy has nosebleeds and she can have them on command. So that was a real nosebleed that she just spontaneously created.
How? It was in the script. How? And they were like worried about it. And she said, don't worry about it. And then she did it on cue.
You know, I'm sure we'll talk about whether or not we approved of that decision, but I just think that's really pretty wicked. The second thing was I really loved the way that after the confrontation at Box Hill, when she is rude to Miss Bates, she is constantly kind of on the verge of tears. You know, she has this kind of reckoning with her vanity and she cries in that scene with Knightley. And then we see her just sobbing in the window when she talks to her dad. And then you see her visit Miss Bates and she just has tears welling in her eyes and she, you know, visits Harriet and she's crying and she's just constantly on the verge of tears. And I thought that was a great way to show you the emotional turmoil that Emma's in. And it really helped me believe that she actually went through a big shift.
One of my favorite things about this film was it showed you a lot more of the character's internal feelings. Like you got to see Knightley wrestle with, you know, Mr. Elton showing up and then Frank showing up and their little tiff because, hey, I like Emma and you might like Emma. And he's just, you know, him throwing himself on the floor and kind of like having a huff was fantastic. I love that. And like you said, Juliet, like we got to see Emma kind of come to terms with her, like, I did this horrible thing and I need to like fix it because it's a problem.
Absolutely. So now that we've discussed Emma, we'll move on to Mr. Knightley, who is played by Johnny Flynn. What did you guys think of Johnny Flynn's Knightley?
I could not get over the fact the entire movie that he looked like Aaron Tveit in the 2012 Les Mis. Like, I could not get over that fact. It just kept popping out at me.
Also, his butt? They showed his butt at the beginning of the film. Why?
Yeah, that scene was kind of weird to me. Yeah, it's the scene at the beginning of the film where he's coming home and he's kind of, I guess, in like more outdoorsy clothes. He comes in, a servant helps change him. He strips down totally naked. You see his butt and then he gets dressed up a little bit nicer. And I truly do not understand the point of that scene.
It was shocking and I did not see it coming. And it was very like, what in the world?
Part of me was like, are they just trying to show us from right off the bat, this isn't your typical period piece? Because if so, I mean, it worked. Also, I loved watching how clear it was exactly when Emma and Knightley fell in love. I thought it was so cool. They played that angelic music. He went to save Harriet at the Weston's ball. This angelic music started, and it wasn't in a way that was too cringy, like has been done before.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. They made eye contact. There were these looks exchanged between them. And then they had that dance that was so romantic.
That dance scene was just incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a huge part of what made this movie good.
The hand shots were not quite on Pride and Prejudice level, but there was a lot of just like subtle touching. But I read in, I was scrolling through the IMDb like facts and stuff, and apparently the director got permission from the on-set etiquette person, which is amazing that they have those, to have them both be gloveless, because at that time you would not be doing that. But she got approval because apparently they were coming from dinner, so their gloves would have been off, so it was okay. So then you can have the hands touching and it be a little...
Mm-hmm. Also, I totally wrote down, too, that is comparable to the hand flex in Pride and Prejudice, so I think it's hilarious that you said that. But one thing that I just wanted to point out that really made this moment for me, and for those of you that are maybe confused about what we're talking about, it's at the end of the dance, and Knightley has his hands on Emma's waist, and their hands are touching, and then he slowly takes his hand off of her waist in a movement that's like super romantic, and you've watched them dance together. They're looking at each other, super romantic, beautiful music. But when they get to that point where his hand is moving off of her dress, there's no music. There's no sound. All you hear is his hand on the fabric of the dress and her bracelet make a tingling noise, and them stopping the music and then having silence when they look at each other after that moment was so powerful. I literally rewatched that moment because I was like,
and the whole time you're getting these close-up shots of all mm-hmm. this stuff happening, because when you like have a night like that and you dance with this person that you know may or may not have feelings for, I feel like that's what you remember, is those small things, like when you know you were pulled close during the dance and how his hand felt when it slipped off of your waist and those things. And so I really liked it because I think it captures the way that you think about those moments, and when you're in those moments, that's what you're noticing. And I just really love that part. And I mean, as much as it was comparable to, and I'm sorry we talk about the 2005 Pride and Prejudice so much, but this just really reminded me of it, but as much as it was comparable to that hand flex scene with Darcy, this is also so comparable to Elizabeth and Darcy's dance, because it was a huge shifting point for them, as it is for this couple and Emma, where, you know, in Pride and Prejudice, they were dancing and all of a sudden it was like they were so lost in the dance that it was just the two of them and everyone else in the room faded. And this was a very similar effect that we got with those close-up shots and with the, you know, the music stopping and all of that.
It was so similar, and I feel like if we ever do an episode on the amazing 2005 version of P&P, it needs to be like 2 hours long, because there's no way we're going to have the strength to cut our comments.
I also wanted to point out before we move off of this scene really quickly that the music that plays when I think they fall in love, when he saves Harriet off the dance floor, they repeat that exact same singular person singing this kind of angelic melody at the beginning of the proposal scene. And I thought that was so cool.
I didn't catch that.
I also think that we tend to see Knightley as a little bit less emotional. Kind of, you see him pick at Emma and get angry with Emma in lots of different films, but I think this one did, and Johnny Flynn himself did a really good job of showing just how distraught Knightley is in his wide range of emotions. Particularly, this is a big book to movie difference, but after the ball, when
yes,
Emma goes home and then Knightley runs to her and she's about to go down to him, and it's like they're about to have this declaration of love, which is just freaking interrupted. But
anyway, way to go, Harriet.
I just love that part and the emotion that you can see from Flynn. And then when he goes back to his house and he's just so upset, and he's ripping his clothes off, and he's lying down on the ground so defeated. Oh, so good.
Honestly, I related so much because I know that the hosts know, but in college, if I ever had a rough day and I was emotionally overcome, I would come home and lie on the ground, just on the ground in our living room. And that's what he's doing. He's just like, I can't do it. Just lies on the ground. So I totally related.
Knightley is a floor person. and I feel like the world needs to know that.
Yes. No, I loved that moment too. Even though it wasn't book to movie accurate, I thought it was great. So let's discuss Harriet Smith, who is played by Mia Goth.
What an interesting Harriet.
Yeah, it was very different than anything else I think we've seen.
The main thing that stuck out to me about Harriet was the lack of eyebrows.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm a big eyebrow person. That's what I notice about people. And I was like, she would look a lot better if she had some more defined eyebrows.
One thing that I did really like about this Harriet, I guess, is she's super bubbly and very silly. And this piece really emphasizes just how silly and
young
she is. You see sequences where she's like playing this game involving sand at the boarding school, and that really shows you just how different she and Emma are, because Emma is a bubbly person, but she's much more serious. And I actually really liked seeing that. I felt like it really added to the comedy, and I thought that was really cool. One thing that I did miss, again, this takes away from the book to movie accuracy a little bit, but I would have loved to see this Harriet's take on throwing away Elton's treasures into the fire. I thought that would have been hilarious.
I think their take on that was her throwing the book into that pond thing. I think that was their version of that.
Oh, yeah, probably.
And her taking that portrait, Emma and he had framed, yeah. But something that really added to, she's a very comical character, and something that really added to that was she just, Kelly and I were laughing so hard, she just seemed kind of mousy.
Yeah.
Like she ate weirdly and with a lot of noises. But the main thing was her walking. It was like this weird trot thing where she was like kind of bouncing around, and it was too funny.
There's a mouse comment I'll make later about a different character. But yes, Beth, I totally agree. I think one of my favorite things about Harriet, it's kind of around her, it's not about her specifically, is how her and Emma's relationship develops. It kind of goes from Emma seeing her as a charity case to them actually being friends. Because at the end, like, you see how distraught she is, or how distraught Emma is over Harriet, and like they have a sleepover, which we had a sleepover last time too. But you know, like, you can genuinely tell at the end that they are friends, and like Emma wants to keep that friendship, where at the beginning I was like, I don't really know about this.
One thing I really wanted to get your opinions about: when Knightley and Emma have the fight about Robert and Harriet and their relationship together, Emma tells him, I wasn't trying to keep Harriet from Robert. I just wanted to keep my friend. And I wasn't sure if that was just this movie having a different take, or if Emma was lying to Knightley.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know that I picked up on that.
I know what you're talking about. I just don't know.
It was definitely a minor detail.
Send us a DM. Let us know what you think.
So now that we've discussed Harriet, let's talk about her first love interest, Mr. Elton, who is played in this film by Josh O'Connor. Thoughts?
I could not place it at first, with his like movements and how he moved was very odd to me. It was kind of freaking me out. And then it hit me about, I don't know, a quarter of the way through the movie. He reminds me of Peter Pettigrew.
Mm.
And it really freaked me out, because once I saw it, like, he looked like a rat and I couldn't shake it. And it was really disturbing.
That's actually really funny. I will say he plays Prince Charles in The Crown, and I could not stop thinking about that.
What? Yeah, I just saw him as Prince Charles the whole time. Especially when I watched it the first time. Had it been that long since I'd watched the third season of The Crown, I was like, oh, that's Prince Charles.
Honestly, like, do they have similar attitudes sometimes? You be the judge.
But yeah, I really liked him. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I thought he was a good actor.
But yeah, I just saw Prince Charles the whole time. And he looked ridiculously like Churchill to me. They look like almost the same person.
Yeah, they look similar.
That's interesting. I didn't really notice that. I did think that Elton played a great line between it is clear to the audience that he is pursuing Emma, but not so clear that we're thinking Emma's really kind of silly for not noticing. Yeah. We're going to talk about this later, but the proposal scene was great. I did feel like, though, after he got married to Mrs. Elton, his character just kind of took a dive. And this happens a lot, but you just totally lose him. He doesn't really make an impact on you anymore. One thing that I did notice was that he kept falling asleep in the scenes that he was in after he got married, which I thought was kind of weird. Like, he was asleep at one point when they were at Mr. Knightley's house, and I don't know. Maybe they were trying to make a point about how he's bored in his marriage to Mrs. Elton.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of Mrs. Elton?
I honestly don't have a whole lot of thoughts. Like, she was annoying if you really want to pay attention to her. But, like, I feel like beyond Emma, Harriet, and Knightley, there weren't, and like, maybe her dad. I kind of loved her dad in this. All the other characters weren't that impactful, and I couldn't really find myself super paying attention to them.
Yeah, I thought she was obnoxious. I thought her hair was absolutely insane. That's where the bad hair comes in. But clearly this time it was purposeful.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to have another bad hair moment, can we talk about Knightley's, like, chin beard sideburn situation? I was not a fan. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I guess ultimately I felt like Mrs. Elton was a good Mrs. Elton, but it wasn't necessarily notable.
Yes. I do feel like I really actually liked all of the, like, side secondary characters in this. I thought they really did a good job with their casting, but they didn't get as much screen time. So I see what you're saying, that they may not have made as much of an impact, but Miss Elton just kind of felt like, she felt like a bird. Oh, bird-like.
Yeah. The tiny little head and the long neck.
Yeah, she had a really long neck. And I kind of, sorry, this is weird, but I liked the visualization when the servants came and put the really tall cake right behind her. And it's like, you get the really tall cake next to her really long neck. And I was like, are they playing on something here? Because...
Well, speaking of characters that aren't particularly notable, I'm revealing my opinion early. What did you guys what did you guys think of Callum Turner's Frank Churchill?
I mean, it was good. Like I said, I really liked what they did with all the characters in this. But also, he didn't get a lot of screen time. I mean, we just didn't see a ton from him. There is kind of some Frank moments that I missed a little bit. You know, I don't know that he was quite as flirty with Emma in this one.
He was more reserved.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't as flirty with Emma in this one. You did have a couple of moments where he would look at Jane and they would show their kind of mutual acknowledgement of each other that was supposed to be flirting. But overall, again, the Frank and Jane story had to take a backseat to the Emma and Knightley story, the Emma and Harriet story. And I don't think... There were definitely scenes I missed. Frank's acknowledgement and almost confession of love to Emma that is actually about Jane. I thought, you know, that's something that's really important that I missed. But I understand why they got rid of it. I think they really had a very impactful Emma and Knightley story in this adaptation. And so they just chose to forego the Frank and Jane story, which is sad. But
yeah, I feel like he was mainly used to further the Emma and Knightley story. I mean, especially when, you know, you think you're about to get that declaration of love between Knightley and Emma. And I mean, you know, it's not going to happen, but still. And then Churchill comes in with Harriet. And, you know, instead of asking Knightley to stay and help her, she asks Frank, which is because she thinks Harriet likes Frank. But, you know, to Knightley, does it come off that way? And so, I mean, it felt like that was mainly what his character was used for, was just to move that forward.
He's a tool in their storyline.
I feel like one of my favorite things that they used Frank for was this weird, almost love triangle-esque thing going on between Knightley, Frank, and Emma. There's that one moment I think it's right before the ball when it's both of them, Frank and Knightley, are like flanking the door, and Emma walks up and Knightley's like, after you, kind of. And Frank's like, after you. And Emma walks through and the guys kind of have a, you go, no, you go, you go, no, you go, kind of a moment. And it really kind of like played for me. Like, this was a, we keep bringing things back to early 2000s rom-coms, but it kind of did like feel like one of those like high school drama-ish things where like Knightley is the girl's best friend, and by the end of the film, you know, they're together, but the whole time are they, you know.
I totally see what you're saying. I think that's a very good comparison. So let's move on to somebody who I think gets more credit in this movie than they normally do. Let's talk about Mr. Woodhouse, who's played by Bill Nye.
Yes, I talked about this in our very first episode. I said that he was the perfect Mr. Woodhouse to me, and I stand by it. I just loved what they did with him. Just the whole part about the drafts was so funny. And it's just such a good, you know, example of the silliness that comes with wealth that is shown so much in this movie. I just loved him. I mean, I thought he was just like the perfect neurotic Mr. Woodhouse. It was amazing.
He provided a ton of situational humor, which I definitely appreciated in this film. And I think the whole drafts situation, which was beautifully done, love his portrayal of that, with the screens, was like perfect setup for that scene at the end where like the screens go up and then all of a sudden Emma and Knightley are making out and you're like, oh. Okay.
Again, and I think he knew what he was doing.
Oh, he knew what he was doing. He did too. I thought that was great. I loved him. The first time I watched it, I didn't as much, but I loved two things specifically. He had these two servants on either side of him pretty much at all times in green who were just constantly at his every need, but they were also very clearly annoyed by his neuroses. And I thought that was really funny. The other thing was when he's first introduced, he's going down the stairs to get ready for the Weston wedding, and he jumps. He jumps down the last two stairs. And I think right off the bat, they were establishing this is a more energetic Mr. Woodhouse than you are used to seeing. And I thought that was really cool.
I will say those two servants get top billing on IMDb. They are literally right underneath Emma, which is hilarious. Okay, so I don't know if y'all caught this while you were watching, but I definitely did, and you know why. Mr. Weston is played by Rupert Graves, who is Lestrade in the BBC Sherlock. So yes, if you love Benedict Cumberbatch and you were watching that and you go and watch this, Lestrade is Mr. Weston, and you can't really get past it at first, but then you do, and it's beautiful.
I don't know that we've had an episode without Lori managing to talk about Sherlock somehow yet.
That's true.
It's happened every episode.
Okay, Jules, you mentioned at the beginning how some of that fan club was not a fan of this movie because of the book-to-movie accuracy. So what do we all think about it? Did anything really stick out to y'all?
Honestly, I felt like it captured the vibe of Emma. It captured the character of Emma well, but there were definitely moments. They added in that almost love confession of Emma and Knightley. They took away a lot of the Frank and Jane storyline, specifically Frank's almost confession of love to Emma. And so some of those things took away from the book to movie accuracy. But I felt like it was all for the purpose of being able to dive into that Emma and Knightley story more, because that was really the main focus of this. Do I miss Frank and Jane? Yes, but we got a better story of Emma and Knightley because of it.
I totally agree. I love the comedic spirit of this movie, but they also, you know, made a lot of choices in what they took out and what they added in to make it more romantic. And I really enjoyed that. You know, I think that the choices they made worked really well for this film. So what did you guys think about the proposal scene between Elton and Emma?
I kind of loved how Elton got so mad at the end and got physical. Like, you saw his character flip. Like, you could tell him acting with Emma at the beginning was kind of an act almost to kind of like draw her in, which is a little weird if you think about it. But like when she flat out denies him and he finally gets it, he like loses it and he's yelling and he's like throwing hands up, not at her, but you know, like at the ceiling. And like that flip moment to me was like the best part of that scene, I guess, because you see how drastic his character is.
I thought Emma also behaved differently than we've seen, which I kind of liked. She spent the first half of the proposal pretty much just denying that he actually liked her. And she's like, no, 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 you're drunk. You think you're talking to Harriet and you're not. And then finally, when she realized it, she was very cold in her rejection of him, which I thought it was a cool take on it. Also, I thought it was really interesting that at the very beginning, it was really creepy, but he untied his cape very slowly. And then he got thrown onto Emma by the lurching of the carriage. And I thought that was kind of like a funny and also very creepy segment.
Yeah, it definitely set the tone for that scene with like the really slow draw off of the cape. And then, okay, he has one layer off. Then all of a sudden he's like thrown on her. It was very weird. I wondered where this was going to go. Luckily, it didn't go the way that I thought it might have gone. But yeah, I did not enjoy it in like the best way, I guess.
I also felt like Elton held his composure for the first half of the proposal too. And then when Emma kept insisting that he must mean Harriet, he had that line that we've gone back to a couple of times. Everybody has their level. And the way he delivered that, I actually really liked. It was like deep and very like intense. He meant it.
It was pointed.
It was. And then he started to get a little more intense with the proposal. But I thought it was a well-executed scene for sure.
So what did you guys think of Knightley's proposal to Emma?
Oh my gosh. Can we talk about how romantic it was? And you could literally see Knightley processing his emotions on his face and like trying to get it out to Emma. I think he was my favorite part of that scene, like out of the two of them. And then at the end, you know, after she has her nosebleed and the moment's kind of ruined, how like all of a sudden it goes from we're in this really romantic scene to Emma's like, I have to go and deal with this. And then she leaves like rather abruptly and he just like fist pumps the air. He's so happy.
I thought that was so cute. I also thought, you know, again, the connection of the music from when Emma first falls in love with him to that music playing again was so great for me. And the emotion between them, their chemistry is so good. And I felt like this moment was so powerful because there's a very clear, they're friends, they fall in love, they're kind of at this crossroads where they're confused about each other's feelings. And so when they finally admit their love, I felt like it was such a powerful moment.
Yeah, this was such an incredibly romantic scene to me. I have me feeling all the things. And, you know, I think the both of them are just such brilliant actors. They did a great job of just totally embodying their characters and those emotions. And the buildup was so good that this was just such a great, just like critical moment of that relationship. And then just for it to end with her getting the nosebleed and having such a quick change of behavior and running off, I just loved it because it is such a comedic take on Emma, and just to have the proposal kind of like ruined in that way, I thought was just kind of the perfect approach for this movie to take to it.
Honestly, I love the fact that they actually didn't kiss at the proposal because it made that end scene later with them kissing like all the more romantic. And then, you know, that moves them quickly into their actual wedding. So I think it was very pointed and like well done.
Yeah, I thought that it was a really sweet scene. The nosebleed, again, not book to movie accurate. Her reaction, not totally book to movie accurate. But her thinking about Harriet in that moment, I felt like really reemphasized she has grown and is thinking about other people a lot more, which I actually really liked.
So we all love this proposal scene with Knightley and Emma. But so for the overall film, what made it or broke it for you?
What made it for me was just Anya Taylor-Joy. I really like her, especially after watching The Queen's Gambit. It just made me way more impressed by who she is as an actress. I will say I also really love Bill Nye, so it's like kind of tied between them. And it's really hard for me to say what broke it because I just loved it so much. I honestly, I can't think of anything.
That's okay. You know,
I was sad that it didn't have, actually, truly, I didn't think about it at all. Like when I was watching it, I wasn't like, oh, I miss these scenes with Churchill. In hindsight, I think it maybe would have been nicer to get a little bit more. So I guess that's what I'll say. But I really didn't miss it. I just really loved this so much.
Yeah, I didn't miss those scenes either.
I think my make it for me, I loved watching the relationship between Emma and Knightley be so clearly shown. Just the growth of their love was so sweet to me. And that ball scene, honestly, was probably up there on my favorite movie scenes of all time. So I think that's my make it. What broke it for me, I did really miss Churchill. I really missed seeing Jane more, their relationship. I thought that was kind of sad. I understand why it wasn't in there. And then the second thing that I didn't love was the random hymn singing. Don't get me wrong, big hymn girl, but I didn't love it. Also, just real quick shout out, no weird flashbacks in this movie. Hallelujah.
Also, I just wanted to mention this, which I forgot to earlier. But, you know, I said I really liked the side characters a lot. And some of those characters were actually Knightley's brother and Emma's sister.
Oh my gosh,
they're
yes.
just so funny. And, you know, Ben and I went and saw this in theaters when it came out in February. And since then, we have not been able to stop quoting some of those lines at each other. So we'll, like, be out in public and I'll just be like, husband, comport yourself.
So that's where that's from.
Yes. And he'll just say, wife, comport yourself. And we just think it's the funniest thing ever.
They're very well matched, I will say that. For my make it, I think it was the comedy. I loved the comedy. I laughed so much during this film. And honestly, it was refreshing. Like, I needed it, especially after these 2 weeks. But yeah, all of the comedy was perfectly timed. It was great. The servants had me laughing at every turn. That poor, poor duo. God bless them. But, you know, there was just like moments where it was like perfect comedy and I really appreciated it. So my break it for this film, I'm going to have to bring it back to the hair. I did not really enjoy it. I understand. I saw what they were doing there with the rag curls, but I just could not get behind it. And along that line, some aspects of the costume, like I didn't like the guy's collars really, but I mean, I understand that's period. You know, you got to do that.
So now that we have talked about those things, Lori, tell us who you would date from this adaptation.
It is no surprise. I'm going back to my boy Knightley. Oh my gosh.
Good choice.
At first, I thought I was not going to be able to get past his face. I'm not going to lie. There was a little bit of a, I'm not sure how I feel about you. You know, kind of like where you
he's
see
not
someone.
Like immediately handsome.
Yeah, he's not like the most conventional handsome man that you've ever met in your entire world.
By the end of it, you're feeling a lot of yeah. things for him. But at the beginning.
That definitely threw me off the first time I watched it. But this time I was very ready for his face.
Yeah, so once I kind of got past that, I guess, which I mean. Love is more than your physical attraction, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just be clear about that. But I will say, like, once I spent more time with him and, you know, the film developed and you really got to see his character and how he acted and how he felt. And this Knightley was very expressive. Like, the badly done Emma scene really made me feel something when most of them do not. Like, honestly, most of the time I don't feel anything. Like, okay, wow. But like the way it was done was very well done and just like showed his range of emotions, I guess. And then, you know, him throwing himself on the ground was just great. I loved it. And just he was very well done and I loved him.
How was your quarantine cocktail, Lori?
It was so good. I am done. I think I finished my drink, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes ago. So 10 out of 10, highly recommend. Beth, how was yours?
My butterbeer was really good. It is really sweet. That would be my warning. It's not something that you can really have more than one of. I would say our recipe is not quite perfected yet, but it is really good. And I did finish it. I just have like whipped cream remnants left in my glass. What about you, Julia?
I'm not quite done with mine yet, but I anticipate finishing it. It's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's my favorite drink ever, but it was different and enjoyable.
Okay, everyone, thanks so much for listening to this episode where we talked about the 2020 version of Emma. If you liked this episode, please give us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook. We are on Instagram at Sips and Sensibility Pod and on Facebook at Sips and Sensibility.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining us this week for our 2020 Emma adaptation discussion. Loved it. I think we all had a great time. If you want to join us next time, and you definitely should, we are going to be watching Emma Approved, which is a YouTube adaptation, which is really cool.
Ooh.
And it is obviously on YouTube. You can just type in Emma Approved. The creators are going to be Pemberley Digital. There are 72 episodes. Don't freak out. They're only like 5 to 8 minutes long. I don't know about y'all, but I love the YouTube adaptations, and I can really just binge watch them. It's really nice because they're so short. But until next time, everyone, keep on sippin'.